primary purpose, Big Book Study Group, Thursday night, Alcoholics and Gods, Speaker Step Series. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Steve.
Hi, Steve.
Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a minute to get situated, turn off any phones or devices that are going to make noise or distract others during the meditation. We take this time to get connected to God, let the craziness of the day drift away. We ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. If everybody's ready, we'll start the meditation.
Vigiat vos spiritus, mentes omnes ita, in peso verba gratia, credo quia sit in tua. Christe eris sacritus,
shade up behind me here. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light. For those who are lost, sick, and dying, can find your love through me. Amen. There is a solution from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out in which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. Ask an old friend, Joe, to come up and read Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important that we know what one is.
I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Joe. Spiritual experience. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
All right, please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. Guys, this is where we come for transmit the message and learn. We take this really seriously. It's a tech-free meeting. Set your phones to airplane or just shut them off. And I get to introduce Joe, and I always kind of fret about what I'm going to say, but it worked really well last week, and I'm just going to bring him up. I mean, this guy's had a monumental impact on my recovery. I'd love to listen to him, and I just want to hear what you have to say tonight.
Isn't this nice? I get this, to walk around with this thing on my ear, and Keith and I actually get to do this. I forgot my hat, so maybe I can, I don't know. I don't think there is an escape up here. I'm an alcoholic, and my name is Joe Bear. Hi, everybody. It's such an honor and a privilege to be used by my Father in heaven to be able to do this. You know, I believe that that's why I was spared, and that's why I get to be up here. And, you know, Mike, thank you so much for putting this meeting together. I'm amazed at who God uses to carry his message. And what a mission that is. What a responsibility that is. My best friend and brother in arms is here tonight, and I just want to thank him for being here too, as well as all the others. So let's get to it. We talked a couple of weeks now on what the problem is. And we all know that hopefully there's most of you that are here tonight were here the first night. And we have an understanding of what that problem is. The fact that we're powerless, that we don't have the power to overcome this thing. God knows we've tried. I know that there's people of all walks of life and in all stages of the recovery in here tonight. And, you may be in treatment for the first time, and you may be here for the reason of getting your parents off your back. Actually, your parents were getting you off their back. As it will turn out, you'll find that out. And it's an expensive way to get a vacation, but for whatever reason, it really doesn't matter. The fact is you're here. And hopefully your ears are open and your mind is open and your heart is open to receive some information. And the reason it would be open is usually a result of the horrific beating that we go through administered by alcohol and drugs. You know, that we've come to a place in our life, hopefully, where we are so desperate for something different, so desperate to feel different, so desperate to have a different experience, that our ears are finally open. Sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't. They will become open eventually if they're not tonight. Because there's one thing for sure, that alcohol and drugs will absolutely take you to a point where you will be so desperate and so broken that you will be embracing somebody to give you a direction that's other than the one that you've taken. And, you know, that's the bottom line. I mean, alcohol and drugs, they are our solution when we're out there doing what we're doing. I mean, you know, we talk about, I've been really harping on this thing called the internal condition, this thing that we develop from very early on, before we ever put booze or alcohol or booze or drugs in our body, we develop this thing inside that starts to percolate and fester and grow. And it all starts in this philosophy of life that we adopt, this view of the world that we take on, that, you know, that has us navigate through life in a certain way that we think is going to accommodate us, satisfy us, fulfill us, make it easy for us, whatever that is. And, you know, we adopt all these different things because we're selfish in nature. You know, it's funny that the letters of those three words, selfish in nature, spell out sin. I happen to believe in sin, and I was extremely selfish in nature, all right? And, you know, all the way growing up, I would always seek ways to fulfill what I thought I needed in order to feel comfortable, in order to have a sense of ease within, and a sense of comfort. That's all I ever wanted, was a sense of ease and comfort, because I always felt inadequate, I always felt awkward, I always felt like I didn't quite perform, so I started to pretend and I started to perform. And the only reason I'm moving around up here, by the way, is I'm trying to escape these sunlights up here. I wore a hat last week and I... Yeah, Owen, please. Forgive me, this is like blasphemy. I was taught never to wear a hat. Oh, there you are. So, something started to happen when I was growing up, and I started to feel like I had this emptiness on the inside. You know, I started to feel that I was missing something. You know, and what I started to feel is that I had to perform and pretend to be somebody else to ensure that you'd like me, to ensure that you'd think something different than what I was actually starting to feel on the inside. Because little by slowly, as I didn't, you know, and I thought everybody went through this, I thought they had to be everything to you. You know, I thought you were the decider of who I was. And if you only liked me, if you only thought I was witty and thought I was smart, thought I was educated, thought I was well accomplished, thought I was something, that I'd actually feel like that. And it didn't work that way. What actually happened is it worked in the opposite fashion. It started to make me feel more like a nobody on the inside. Now, because I wanted all these things and I wanted them quickly, and I really didn't feel that God was going to be the adequate direction to take to get that, because I didn't, there was no, you know, everybody told me you need to believe in God. But nobody gave me a timeline as to when, if I did, what, when, if he'd give me what I wanted. You know what I mean? There was a lot of things I wanted. The world was it for me. You know, I wanted stuff. I wanted what you had. I wanted what you made you look better than me. Or made you more accomplished than me. And, you know, the more I pretended, the more this masquerade started to blossom. I had literally become that actor like they talk about in the book. That stage character. I had two lives going on. One was what I wanted you to see, and not only see, but believe. So I had to work really hard. And the other one was really going on, this internal conversation. And the internal conversation was really a reflection of the internal condition. So I started to take shortcuts. I started to lie. I started to cheat, manipulate, deceive. All in an effort to get what it is I thought I wanted, to feel whole, to feel comfortable in my own skin. It didn't work. As a matter of fact, Bill kind of likens it to that double-edged sword that all but cuts you to ribbons, chasing what you think is important and trying to pretend that you're okay doing it. So all the while I'm running this masquerade, pretending to be somebody else, and more I'm starting to feel like a nobody and a zero on the inside. Because there was always those times when I'd have to go home and lay my head on my pillow at night, even though you were buying what I was selling, and know that what you were buying was an act. So, you know, through the effort of trying to be everything to everybody, and through the effort of trying to consume everything that I thought I needed in life in order to feel whole, through all the shortcuts and deceit, manipulation, and the lying, and the inconsideration, and all those things that started to really drive me, was a driving force. Those things that I started to harbor on the inside, as I mentioned the last couple of weeks, and I can't emphasize this enough because this is really the crux of the matter, started to have consequences internally at first. Through the efforts that I took, I started to get this guilt and this remorse and this shame and this embarrassment. I was terrified that you would find out that it was all an act. So I would have to perform harder. And come to find out, a lot of people go through this, even today, even in sobriety. And so I would work harder, I'd feel worse. And these things that I started to harbor, this guilt and this shame and this remorse, come to find out when I read the doctor's opinion, he described the manifestations of that illness, of that dis-ease. He said we become restless, irritable, discontent. Well, hell, when you're walking around with all that stuff going on the inside, you're restless, irritable, discontent. And the worst part about it, as I mentioned, is walking around on earth in our circles pretending like it wasn't real and it didn't exist. How you doing? Great. And be dying inside. And when I finally met liquor, man, I didn't have that going on anymore. At least just for a minute. It all went away. It numbed out. It erased it. It erased it from my mind. And I could be fully self-expressed, being an a-hole even in the process of doing that. I mean, I was drunk, but I didn't care what you thought. And I found the love of my life. I found the solution to all my problems. And I became a drunk. And I became, you know, I became that guy that was constantly seeking escape from the truth within me. You know, I had never, certainly, I mean, I, and you know, when we read the doctor's opinion, he describes some things physically and mentally that we acquire through this thing that made perfect sense to me. You know, he said that, you know, once we put this thing in, because of the allergic reaction, you know, I had to get my head around what the allergic reaction, how it worked in me, because I always thought of an allergy as something that you get when you have hay fever or, like, you know, penicillin, the allergy to that stuff. And he described the allergy to alcohol and the allergy to whatever substance you do that you can't stop when you start as this inability to stop or control it. So when I put it in, I couldn't stop and I couldn't control it. I said that I definitely have the allergy to alcohol and drugs. I mean, every time I would have this preconceived amount that I would attempt to do when I was, like, stopped for a period, and then I would do it again. And I never was able to stop or hold to whatever I thought I wanted to do, like go out for an hour, or just do a little of this, or just do a little of that, or drink a six-pack, or smoke a 20, or whatever it was. Once I began, I had no control. And I always ended up in oblivion, passed out. And that's not the worst part of this thing, because I had stopped many times, right? We've all stopped many times. You stop when you go to detox. You stop when you're in treatment. You stop when you go to jail. Right? We stop a lot. Our problem's not stopping. It's staying stopped. I can't stop starting. My mind somehow has the inability at certain times, because of this internal condition that's going on that I've never addressed, never sought to investigate, never sought to interrupt. I've always pretended like it wasn't there. I was walking around dying, pretending like everything was okay. And that always preceded this ability for me to be able to lie to myself in some form or fashion. Like it wouldn't happen this time, or I'll do it different this time, or nobody will know. You know, I'll just do it now to quell the internal condition and the conflict and the chaos, and I'll just stop and stop tomorrow. I'll just stop tomorrow. I would have to believe this lie, which is insane given the consequences and the evidence of what I created in my life. I would go insane and believe the lie that I was telling myself, therefore giving myself permission to put it in my body, which would ensure that I wouldn't be able to stop. See, I didn't understand this thing. I always tried to conquer it. I always tried to figure it out. I always said to myself, I didn't know the severity of what I had within my skin. Right? I didn't know I had a death sentence. I didn't know I had a terminal disease. I figured it's okay for you to acknowledge that, but I wasn't going to acknowledge that until I was so broken and so done living that dying was more attractive. This went on and on for years, right? So I understood this thing of being powerless because I knew I couldn't stop when I started, and I knew I couldn't stay stopped because of the insane obsession, this thought or group of thoughts that came in and overwhelmed me. See, we all have willpower. I have a lot of willpower. I'm a pretty strong-willed guy. But when it came to overcoming that obsession, the internal condition, as bad as it was, demanded that I succumb. I had no power over it. So I needed to seek power. And I needed to seek power in a different direction than I had ever been experienced to. See, they talk about prejudice a lot in We Agnostics. Best chapter, as far as I'm concerned, that I've ever seen. Matter of fact, there's scholars that have said that's one of the best pieces of literature they have ever read when it comes to an argument to convince me that it's better to believe than not believe. And for those of us that are dying from the disease of alcoholism and addiction, it's that much more important. I need to be convinced. They even say it. I need to be convinced, one, that I'm dying from this thing, that I can't overcome this thing, that I am truly an alcoholic and can't manage my own life. And two, that I have to come to believe that only a power greater than myself can restore me to sane thinking when it comes to drinking or drugging. There's only one way that power is going to be able to do that. And that's by making the decision to go through this process to tackle the internal condition. Because I can get stopped a lot. But if I don't take care of the very thing that's literally forcing me to put that magical solution in my body to quell that thing going on the inside, I'm a dead man walking. There's no doubt. I mean, there's nothing else for me to do but drink myself and drug myself to death. Right? So, power, powerless, without power, power. What's my decision to be? We talked about this last week. This is where everybody goes sideways. Because we know we're talking about God here. We know we're talking about a higher power. They say that in the beginning, and then they say that this book was, you know, written so we could find this power, and that means we're going to talk about God. Ebby said to Bill, he says, look, because Bill had the same argument. Oh, man, okay, now I know why you came over to talk to me. You're gonna make me get on my knees and get saved and, you know, do that altar call thing. I get it. But Ebby was simply saying, look, I couldn't stop on my own. And since I did this, I was able to stop. And Bill kept arguing. He says, look, Bill, he says, why don't you form your own conception of God? Now, God is God. I know we all have people in here that we're in relationship with. You know, we all, most of us have a sister or a brother or somebody close to us that we have a relationship with. We're close with. We know them in a way that's really unique. I'm talking about those people that you're really, really close with, that you've been involved with most of your life. I pick out my sister, one of my sisters. I have five of them. I have one. I have one in particular that I'm super close to. And I had this relationship with her. But what I never really took into consideration is she had relationships with other people. So I had my conception of this relationship with my sister. It involved many things. Intimacy, you know, truth. We would share our feelings. I knew that she was a woman of integrity. She was a woman of really this selfless nature. She loved to help people. But I didn't know that there were other people that had a relationship with her and their own conception of that relationship that was different than mine. She had children that had a different conception in their relationship to her. She was the authoritarian. She told them what to do. It was a different relationship that I had with my sister. And then there were people that worked with my sister that had a different conception of that relationship with her. And then, of course, there was her significant other that had a completely different relationship, which was way different than the one that I had with her. But we all had a relationship with my sister. It's the same thing with humanity. God is God. We all have our different relationships. Some are good, some are bad. Some are completely barren. Some are just enriched. Some are confused. Some are defiant. Some are belligerent. Some are whatever. It doesn't change the fact that there is some kind of relationship with that Creator. Good, bad, or indifferent. Doesn't matter. The question is if you're in your addiction and you're powerless, is it sufficient to overcome your addiction to alcohol or whatever substance you're addicted to? Is it sufficient to take you or catapult you from the place that you live now or have lived all your life, whether you're drinking or not, and you're miserable? Has it been sufficient to catapult you into one that is unbelievably powerful and enlightening and safe and protected and intimate and personal? You got to ask yourself these things. Well, that Bill knew this kind of stuff. He knew some would be agnostic, some would be atheist. He knew some would draw a very particular idea of that God, and it's probably the one that we were introduced as a child. You see, humanity has a creator in which humanity decided we're going to put all these different kind of hats on this creator. Your creator could have a Catholic hat, could have a Jewish hat, could have an Episcopalian hat, Presbyterian hat, Muslim hat, could have any kind of hat that you want to put on. And everybody has their own conception. You may not have any hat at all. You may say there is no God, but that's not going to help you get over alcoholism and drug addiction, is it? Of course not. Unbelief is not going to work. I guess it's kind of like my sponsor says, how well has that been working for you, Joe? Holy crap. It hasn't been working. So what I've got to come to the point of is if I'm powerless, I'm going to die from this disease of alcoholism and addiction. And I need to seek a power greater than myself to restore me to sane thinking. In other words, to keep me stopped. Not to get me stopped, to keep me stopped. Human power can help get me stopped, can't keep me stopped. No judge, no mom, no dad, no circumstances, no consequences. Nothing kept me stopped. But if I'm going to need to seek a power to keep me stopped, I have a decision to make. It's called go on to the bitter end, finish a job, take myself out, or become willing to believe that a different relationship that I have. I like to kind of intermingle this word relationship and conception. that I can possibly form and develop a different conception of the Creator. Because I'm dying. I'm dying. What's my choice to be? Worse yet, I'm going to live through this thing and want to die. And then Bill says, look, he says, all you got to do is be willing. You know, my dad always used to say, he says, Joe, he says, you need to get back to your faith. You need to get back. On his dying day, on his deathbed, he says, Joe, you need to get back to your faith. Because he knew I was like off on all that. That used to baffle me. How do I get back on my faith? I never had faith. I had a relationship through education and indoctrination and understanding of what they taught me, but I had never developed a relationship of reliance. I had never developed a relationship intimate enough where I would be willing to walk on a path that would be pleasing and acceptable to Him. I was addicted to the world. I want nothing to do with Him. I acknowledged that He was God. But that's as far as it went, like a cosmic bellhop. Hey, I need you now. Like I'm in jail. I need a hand here. Right? So based on the two conclusions, that I'm powerless, that I'm an alcoholic, that I'm a drug addict, and I can't manage my own life, my thinking, my life, my evidence of what I have created, my criminal record, my destroyed relationships, my feelings, my chaotic conflict on the inside, everything that I am as a sum total of my life on this planet is called my life. That's what it's called, my life. It's my past. And based on my past, wouldn't any normal that wants to live and continue to live and possibly be happy be at least willing to believe that a different conception or relationship is possible? Because everybody out there, you guys are telling me, Peter's telling me I can have this relationship. All I have to do is be willing to believe. Because when I become willing to believe, then I'm going to have to make a decision to seek that belief in a way that I have no idea how to do that. I used to think I'd have to go back to my church of childhood and double down and, you know, and say the 100 rosaries and go to confession every day and blah, 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 in order to have this developer. But that didn't work either. Because I did that too. That's like saying I could go to, 10 meetings a week and become recovered. That means I could go down to Fort Lauderdale International Airport and park on Perimeter Road for 90 days, for an hour a day, and just watch the planes take off and land and become a pilot. Hey, guys, come and fly with me. It doesn't work like that. Meetings are fantastic. The fellowship is phenomenal. It's where we love one another and commune with one another and serve. But it's not sufficient to overcome the obsession of my mind. I can literally stay the same and melt right in with the herd. And then when one jumps off the cliff, just like a sheep, phew, I'm right behind you. Yeah. Be willing to believe that a different relationship can be possible based on these people, these champions in my life that are saying, Joe, all you gotta do is be willing. See, this is all this information I've been talking about for the last however many minutes is simply to present you with the argument. First of all, we've got to come to the conclusion of whether we are or whether we're not. Can I stop when I start? Can I control it when I start? All you gotta do is look over your shoulder, figure that out. To your own past. You don't need to hear me talk about it. Right? And when I get stopped, can I stay stopped? Well, if you're here, the obvious answer to that is no. Which means you don't have the power to choose whether you're going to do it or not going to do it. You may have little gaps in between. You can come in here and stop drinking and drugging and stay sober on fellowship recovery for a little while. and be dying inside the whole time and pretending like it's not real. But eventually you're going to jump off the cliff. Eventually you've got to medicate this thing inside. People in AA that don't do the work to take care of this internal condition shoot themselves sober or jump in front of a freaking train. I've had that too. What you have to know is this. It's like my dad said, Joe, get back to your faith. Well, I didn't know there was going to have to be some conclusions made that, number one, I'm powerless over the ability to overcome this monster that lives within me, this terminal disease. Two, I would have to make a decision to seek this power, to incorporate it in my life. Didn't quite know how to do that, but it all was based on my willingness. What did I want? What do you want, Joe? What do you want? That's what John said. What do you want? I thought you had to, by some stroke of luck or miracle, get the faith, and then everything would be okay. I didn't know that you had to start with just a simple belief. The belief I got from seeing others that told me that what they did is, in what I'm describing, they were able to acquire a faith. Belief comes before faith, people. You're not just going to automatically have faith. Right? I've got to believe that that's possible. That I could have faith in this power. They say in the book, and we acknowledge it, say, look, all you have to do is be willing to believe. Why would we be willing to believe? Because we're dying and life sucks. That's why I'm willing to believe. They say for the agnostic, do you now believe? Or are you at least willing to believe for the atheist or the non-believer? Many of us don't take that position of atheism, but we still don't believe. Because we're operating life from our own view, of our own philosophy. And we can't get we can't get off it. Somebody said, if you don't like the destinations you've been ending up at, get out of the damn seat and let somebody else drive. Duh. They say that when you are willing to believe that a different relationship or conception is possible of this God we're talking about, or do believe, that they emphatically assure us we're on our way. You know, when I say I'm at least willing to believe in this power that's going to guide me, when I say that, I'm saying, I'm unintentionally saying that I'm not able to get me there. Like I'm able to step into the bathroom and fire that idiot looking back at me from running my life anymore. Because God, I've got this. And then they say that it's time. If you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. Well, those certain steps are coming up. I've got to decide to take them. That's all it is. Powerless power, what do you want? Are you willing to take this? Are you willing to go for this? Because let me tell you what you've got to give up if you decide to go that way. It's called control. You can't control the outcome of what's going to happen. But I can promise you this, you will enjoy it. You will enjoy it beyond your imagination. And it all starts with a decision. See, when I decide to turn my will, which is my thoughts, my whole understanding, my view, my philosophy, my everything, when I'm willing to turn that over and present it to a power to do something with it that I've not been able to do with it and won't be able to do with it, and I'm willing to turn my life, which is my past, my sum total of everything that I've been able to create with all my ability, talent, skills in the realm of everything, which is zero, When I'm willing to do that, turn that over to this Creator's care, I'm saying I can't manage my life anymore effectively. I mean, come on, we got to be honest with the truth. Facts are facts. We can't stop lying to ourselves. We have what we have. Just take a look around you at your relationships, for God's sakes. How intimate, authentic, and personal and empowered are they? Or how shallow and disconnected and inauthentic are they? Right? And all I'm doing is making a decision to seek this power the way you guys have laid it out for me, the way Bill and Bob laid it out in the book, in here, right? This is amazing. I mean, the first two questions that they have in the agnostics lets me know that I don't have to read 44 questions. It says, if you find you cannot quit entirely or stay stopped because of the obsession of the mind, because of this lie we can tell ourselves to put it in our body, right? Or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably an alcoholic or suffering from addiction to whatever, right? It says if that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experiences can conquer. What have you been trying? And how well has it been working out for you? We're so resistant to this. I don't know. I never really had a good answer for that. Initially, I thought I'd be committing the worst possible sin I could ever commit, and that's to deviate from the thing that I was taught as a child. I thought that would like be the ultimate blasphemy. I made it up. I made it all up. There may have been some influence being taught. They use religion a lot of times, at least in my case, as a behavioral tool. You do that, this is what's going to happen. It scared the hell out of me. Although I am kind of going blind, so I don't know what that's all about. But hear this, listen. It says this, to be doomed to an alcoholic death, step one, or live on a spiritual basis, step two, are not always easy alternatives to face. Because I make up what I think they're talking about. Well, I know what they're talking about. And I can envision myself going into church, kneeling in the pew, and saying the rosary, and like meaning it. That's what I would make up. I would defeat myself before I even gave this a chance. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. But it isn't so difficult. About half our original fellowship were exactly that type. I'm talking about the atheist or agnostic. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue. Listen to this. This is really powerful. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue. I don't know. Some of us. I don't know. Everybody that I know tried to avoid this issue. I'm down here in your story. Hoping against hope we weren't true alcoholics or drug addicts. But after a while, we had to face the fact, listen to this, that we must find a spiritual basis of life, or else what? Die. I don't know about you, but I have imagined myself at my own funeral. I had to do it through an exercise that I was in at one time. And I was still in my addiction. And as I envisioned myself at my own funeral, there was such disappointment and despair. The legacy I was leaving behind was one of total destruction and disappointment. And you all know I'm a college educated guy. I'm pretty accomplished in a lot of respects, but just that. But as a human being, I was tearing people apart. I was destroying them. I hated me. Nobody came up to the casket at my funeral and said, man, what a life, what a legacy. I'll never be the same. I'll be so much better off for having known him. Wasn't that at all. I can tell you right now, it'll be that today. What's your story? Says lack of power, that was our dilemma. You know, after page 45, they don't talk about alcohol anymore. At all. They talk about power. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. Obviously, but where and how were we to find this power? Here's the secret. Well, that's exactly what this book is all about. You can go to 1,000 meetings and not hear that, because we've become so watered down. I strongly recommend that the newcomer go to literature-based meetings so you can hear the truth about how to live rather than die. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself that will restore you and solve your problem. That will solve your problem. That's what this book is all about. And listen to this. That means we've written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral or truthful. And that means, of course, that we're going to talk about God. And guess what? We're not going to apologize for that. We're going to stand for Him. That's what they're saying. That's their experience. And millions of others. You can see the difference between the fellowship of the Spirit and the fellowship of the rooms so distinctly. The fellowship of the Spirit are people that are empowered, laughing, moving, leading. The fellowship of the rooms, many of them, if they're not in the fellowship of the Spirit, are walking around like they've been hit in the face with a dead fish. Nothing but complaining. Nothing but negativity. Nothing but victimization. Victims can only tell their stories to other victims. Let me tell you how miserable my freaking life is, and I'll listen to how miserable yours is, like that conspiracy theory. I'll buy your doo-doo if you buy mine. There's such a difference. It's like night and day. What fellowship do you want? This is all intertwined. We have a responsibility to seek this deal, and after we receive it, bring it to the other deal. Right? So, it says we found that and by the way, prejudice is simply old attitudes, ideas, and beliefs. We've got a few minutes left. I'm going to do this as quick as I can. Roland Hazard was a chronic drunk, very, very wealthy family, couldn't get sober. Great businessman, but he was just a stain in the family image. Back then in that day, back in the 30s and 40s and 20s, if you were a drunk, you were a stain on the family, especially in the socialite arena. He went to his daddy, said, look, I'm going to take one more shot at this. He'd been to many sanitariums. They called them sanitariums, and now we call them treatment centers. I know there's a lot of multiple attenders here tonight. I'm one of them. He says, I'm going to take a chance. He says, I'm going to stick you with the best psychiatrist on planet Earth. His name was Freud. Unfortunately, Freud was a humanist and a non-believer. But he had a protege that was interning under him by the name of Dr. Carl Jung, second most brilliant mind on the planet at the time. Well, they couldn't get with Freud because he was busy. So Roland's daddy sent him to Europe under the care of Dr. Jung. Stays with him for a year, or treats with him for a year. Roland says, man, I've got such a profound knowledge of the inner workings of my mind. He thought relapse was impossible. But Roland had only acquired a profound knowledge, like many of us do, of the inner workings of our past, of what we know. See, when we come here, it's what we don't know that we must learn. If we continue to operate on that which we know, we're going to get the same results. You can't not. And he went back to Young. He got drunk on the train ride back to, I think, Paris or somewhere. But when he left him, he got drunk. He goes back to Dr. Young. He says, man, what happened? please tell me what happened. Here's what the doctor told him. He says, you have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. I've never seen one single case like yours recover. How do you like that after treating with this guy for a year? I tell everybody I'd be asking for my money back. You should have told me that a year ago. And Roland's begging him, please tell me, is there anything that you can do for me? Have you ever, is there any way you can steer me? Dr. Young says, yeah. He says, matter of fact, I've been trying to produce this in you, but he says, I've seen what happens every now and then, once in a while on a blue moon. These alcoholics such as yourself that have it as severe as you do have what are called vital spiritual experiences. And when he says, to me, they're a phenomenon. I don't know how you get it. I can't tell you how to go get it. But I can tell you I've seen them, and I've seen the transformation, this caterpillar to butterfly effect. It's like this magical thing that happens where old attitudes, ideas, and beliefs, where we are prejudiced, right, are suddenly or gradually cast on one side and supplanted with a whole new set. That's what this is all about. Deciding to give up selfish and self-centered principles and acquire and implementing spiritual principles into our life. Because that's the only thing that's going to change our thinking. Thus change our feeling and our emotions. Thus change our actions and our results. Right? But the prejudice that we exude based on our old belief system, what we think we know, is literally killing us. My sponsor says, Joey says, it's what you know is killing you. It's what you don't know is going to save your life. This whole thing is making a decision to find out what you don't know about him and about everything. It may not change our education a bit, the ability to say 2 + 2 = 4. I'm not talking about that. They're talking about this other thing. This other place. And all we have to do is be willing to make that decision. And they say once we make that decision to seek, that immediately, next, the very next thing that will take place is the action of doing a 4-step inventory. You see, we don't have to figure none of this stuff out, people. None of it. If we decide to go this way instead of going the same way we've always gone, based on our brokenness, we're saying, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to turn my will, my thoughts, and my actions over to His care. And how is that displayed? It's displayed in this inventory that I take of myself so that I can find out who the world's been getting when I show up on the scene. Through my resentments, my fears, and my harms. Right? So they say, when I've taken that 3rd step prayer and I made that decision with my sponsor, that next, at once, I follow with an inventory to search out the flaws in my makeup that caused my failure. What caused that internal condition? Because if I don't identify what caused that internal condition, number one, I won't be able to fix it. And two, I'll continue to operate with it. A lot of people come in, they get sober on fellowship recovery, they just don't drink and they go to meetings and the most miserable people you've ever want to meet in your life. You say, God, if I'm going to be like that in 20 years, I don't want nothing to do with this. I'm going to be like that? Oh, right? If you told me that I have to come in here and make a decision to stay the same, but I just couldn't drink, I'd say, you're out of your freaking mind. I'm going to get a drink. Or a gun. Right? So if we make this decision to seek, we're immediately doing a 4-step inventory, and next week we're going to talk all about that. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Joe. Thank Joe again, everybody. That was amazing. Secretary's report. Hi, my name is Fred, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary.
In keeping with the Severn tradition, which states that every group should be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I've asked Ronnie to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
I'm Ronnie. I'm an alcoholic. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
...1940-style Big Book sponsorship. From the fourth to the second edition, Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sobered at once and remained that way, 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, and come to believe and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I have a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Is there anyone in need of a sponsor tonight? Please raise your hand. You can just stand for a moment, please. Everyone who's available for sponsorship, can we please meet with them after the meeting? Please join us Monday nights. We have a Big Book study meeting up on the third floor where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30 and the meeting itself starts at 7:15. We have large print Big Book and Big Book dictionaries for sale. We meet every Thursday starting promptly at 8:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. And I have a quick announcement. Southeast 15th, the intersection of Southeast 15th and Los Olas will be closed. You can come at this front road right here if you're coming that way, I believe, on Los Olas. Thank you guys, and I'll see you next week.
Thanks, Fred. We have tonight's session and all the past speakers' podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night Big Book study. And everybody that wishes to thank the speaker, please line up down the center aisle here. We'll have Joe up front. If we could have a moment, then close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
See y'all Monday or next Thursday. Godspeed.
Possessions that I have amount to nothing. at all. And I am willing to hand over every one of them, 'cause they won't profit me anything in the end. On my own, I just can't get it right. It doesn't matter how hard I try. But with you, I become a much stronger man. Getting on my knees puts me back on my feet again. Getting on my knees puts me back on my feet.
Whoa!